Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha.
You're only really being fed all of this content that aligns with whatever perspective you believe in.
How do I know that they know that what they're sharing is accurate?
And I always looked up to my dad as, like, he's the smartest person ever.
We value different things than the people older than us, and that's okay.
Who created this original post I'm sharing? How can I think about this in a more complex way, or maybe take a minute?
I believe our generation can teach others that media is okay. It's okay.
Today's vast media landscape overflows with content on platforms, especially digital ones, that seem to multiply daily. And the ability to distinguish between fact, feeling, misinformation, and disinformation in mass media is crucial for consumers of all ages. That includes teens who've grown up taking in online content, and in many ways producing it too. So how media literate are they? And where are they learning and practicing those critical skills? Producer Roche Hemmings spoke with three young people, Charlie Myers, Diego Perez Palomino, and Ayla Hopper. Charlie and Diego are rising seniors at Clayton High and Parkway Central High, respectively. Both are editors for their school's newspapers. Ayla was a staff writer for Clayton High's paper. She starts freshman year at St. Louis University this month. Starting with Charlie, then Diego, and then Ayla, each shared their experiences with media literacy education in the classroom. They also offered insight into how they and their peers critically engage with media.
In thinking about this conversation regarding media literacy, it's a simple phrase, but it feels like a loaded one. Right? Like, media literacy to me feels like this amorphous blob of a thing. Like, what is it? What does that entail? When we're thinking about that phrase, when we hear that phrase, what comes to mind for you?
I mean, yeah, when I think about media literacy, I kind of think about it through the lens of, like, being able to recognize and know what's happening in the world around you, mm-hmm. and being well-versed in, you know, current events and the news, whether that be through politics or just anything happening in the world. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's being able to have, like, a sense of cohesion and, like, comprehensiveness about what's going on, and to be able to formulate your own opinions and beliefs on that. And, I mean, you know, it means a lot to be able to know X, Y, and Z about, like, certain events, but to be able to say, this is X, Y, Z, and this is how I feel about it, and this is how it might align with my beliefs, and this is, you know, how it might be important, or, like, the impacts of it. I think that, to me, more defines what media literacy is, and really why it's important, too, for students, and, I mean, people to just have, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think that was very well said. I think, for me, media literacy is kind of a skill. I think it's something that is worked on and should be worked on, because, like you said, it's how you, like, navigate through news without, you know, sticking to one side or another, kind of not reading news and believing it for its whole, but taking parts of it and seeing how it reflects on your opinion. Mm-hmm. And that's not something you can do at first, I think, just by being open to a lot of different sources and a lot of different opinions mm-hmm. that challenge your own opinion. You can, like, work on that skill.
Yeah, I really agree with that. I think media literacy, it's about gauging what you see in the media and kind of interpreting it on your own and figuring out how it aligns with your opinions, if it's valid or not, you know, all that.
I'm hearing that it's a skill set, which I love that from you, Diego. From both Charlie and Ayla, I'm hearing that there's a critical engagement that you're having with media and with the news. So looking at, you know, this through that lens, when were y'all first taught to think critically about the news and media. Charlie, I know that your dad is a teacher. Was thinking critically about the media and news something that you were taught to do even before you stepped into a classroom?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think my dad had the biggest impact on that for me, in the sense that I was always taught to, and I always looked up to my dad as like, he's the smartest person ever and I will believe everything he believes in. But then I got to high school and I got, and even middle school, you know, prior to writing on the school newspaper, I was really kind of taught to come into class being able to recognize that we're learning about history or something with current events, but to be able to also zoom out the lens and look at it like, this is the world and this is what's happening around us, and I can have my own opinions on that don't have to come from my dad, or that don't have to come from these conversations in my, like, with my family or with my friends.
Ayla, you also went to Clayton. You know, when did you start to critically engage with media, and did that start when you entered the classroom at Clayton High School, or was that something that you were taught to do by your parents, by your family, friends, etc.?
I would say I really started paying attention to the media and realizing I just can't believe everything. I'd like to say fourth grade, when Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton were running against each other, and I was just seeing so many, it was just so much going on. It was a lot. It was really a lot for like a little kid to take in, but I had no choice because this is my country. This is where I live. This is gonna, whoever won was gonna be my president. So I felt like I had to engage in that and kind of pay attention. If the news was on at the house, I kind of got to be engaged, because I feel like in this day and age, you can't get away with not watching the news, if you, or not paying attention to some sort of news outlet. If you do not watch the news, you will not know what's going on in the world. You're going to walk around being oblivious, because everyone has such strong opinions. So if you get everything from hearsay, you really have to, I feel like in this day and age, you have to determine what it is for yourself and figure it out for yourself versus hearing things from other people, because everyone has such strong stances and opinions on everything.
Yeah, for sure. Diego, was there a moment for you where you were like, I need to be more tuned in than I already am?
Yeah, there were definitely a couple moments. I know for me, I moved to the United States when I was young, so I kind of feel I came with a perspective a little bit different, not so much integrated. Like I said before, I wasn't really attached. I didn't have a Democrat family member or a Republican this. So I feel like I kind of had like an outside view on it. And I mean, we've lived through some really historic times. So it's kind of, it was said before, it's kind of inevitable that you're going to encounter the news. And especially with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, I mean, that was a race that was like very polarized. There was really like two sides. So when you consume all this media that doesn't really find a middle ground, when you're seeing things where it's like, oh, this person is horrible and this person is just as horrible, you kind of have to learn to like pave your way through what can you take out of this in order to really find like your own opinion and your own consensus on the news.
Oh, for sure. Very quickly, just roundtable style, starting with Diego and ending with Ayla. If y'all could give a grade or assign an emoji to, specifically to your peers, so other Gen Z, as it relates to news and media literacy, what would that grade be? What would that emoji be?
I'd have to give like a solid B+. I think it's definitely looked down upon, and I feel like it's really easy to say, oh, these young kids can't really tell the news. But I think it's kind of underestimated how much, just because of like a couple cases. And I just think it's important to stay optimistic, like a B+, and we're working towards that A. We're not there yet, but I'd give it a B+.
Okay. That, I'm not going to lie, that is very surprising to me. I love to hear it, but that is a little surprising to me, and we'll get back to that. Charlie, what about you?
So I feel like on social media, we get just divided into these echo chambers. So if you're a Democrat, you're only really being fed all of this content that aligns with whatever perspective you you know, believe in, mm-hmm. or and on the other side of the spectrum as well. And what I've noticed with kids, because obviously, I mean, it's pretty transparent. Clayton is a very liberal school district, mm-hmm. and I noticed this especially in light of the Israel-Palestine conflict, because Clayton's also has a very large Jewish population. Kids are super, super media literate in what they believe in now, mm-hmm. but they really find a hard time looking at the other side of the aisle and the other like perspective from these other, whether it be a political party or just a simple belief point. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, I would probably give them like a C. It could be a lot better, but I think they're not, you know, these kids are not stupid. Like, they know what they're talking about. They you know, follow, you know, you look at these kids' Instagram feeds and it's just like Washington Post article, Atlantic article. Like, these kids know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. It's just really only on that one side. I don't know, for an emoji, I might do, like, the one where its mouth is straight and it has one eyebrow raised. Kind of like, you know, like, I don't know if that's true. Just, you know, in the sense that, like, we could be doing a lot better, but, you know, it could also be so much worse.
That's good. And,
yeah.
That's good. Yeah. Ayla, what about you?
Well, overall, I give us a C minus.
Okay.
It's my thoughts really, like, when I get on social media and I see people, like my peers, posting certain things that are just like you can just tell they didn't really do their research. Like, mm-hmm. they saw one Instagram post and ran with it. Mm-hmm. It's like, what are we doing here? Mm-hmm. We have the resources at our fingertips, literally. Mm-hmm. Like, our phones are in our hands mm-hmm. all day, every day, 24/7. So it's a little disappointing that some people just believe anything and they don't fact check, or they don't get more information on it, or they don't try to see the other side. So if I had to pick an emoji, you know, the one that's like the mouth is all crooked and it's like,
yeah,
yes, like that, like, what's going on?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, Diego, you were the most optimistic. And I love that you're the optimist of the group right now. You're carrying that mantle, and I love that. But a through line, despite the differing grades and emojis, is that critical aspect. We struggle with that. Why do you think that is? Why do you think people struggle to research? Why do you think that people struggle to see things from a different point of view? Why is that difficulty there?
As much as I hate to say it, you know, people are lazy. They don't, you know, unless you're, you know, like a journalist, and I'm not, you know, holding myself up to here. I get guilty of this too. But unless you're someone who's super invested in this, like you said, you're not gonna wanna always be seeking to go out and research to fact check everything. And I wish that's exactly the way it was, but that's just not the reality, unfortunately.
I would also say, I feel like now, you know, in addition to like always being, I feel like everybody's always really stimulated. There's always news, mm-hmm. you know, and we see news on our computers, on our phones, on our watches now. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when you have so much news, it's really easy to kind of get caught up, you know. You'll see something and you'll be like, okay, that's definitely not true. But when you see 100 of those, it's kind of difficult to really navigate your mm-hmm. way through, especially for someone that isn't really invested in media literacy. Mm-hmm. Someone who's just kind of like trying to live their life, trying to scroll Instagram, and they see so much, it can be hard to really decipher what's true and what's not.
Yeah, for sure.
I agree with Diego. I also think just as a generation, as a community, our priorities are off. So mm-hmm. it's like we're not, because people do research. People research the things that they want to research in. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you have to be super invested to research about politics and figure out what's going on with the election. But I think we're all Americans. Well, or we all live in the United States of America, rather. So I think we should all have some sort of priority to figuring out what's really going on.
Mm-hmm. Diego, you mentioned earlier something that really stood out to me about your definition of media literacy, is that it's a skill set. which I think is so important to recognize. And I think for a lot of us, the classroom is where we develop a lot of our skills. That said, media literacy is not something that is widely taught in schools. Very few schools in the nation have media literacy classes, and there's no standardized media literacy education in Missouri. Mm-hmm. Knowing that, though, how has media literacy been taught in classes at Clayton, at Parkway Central?
I'm gonna put journalism aside,
okay?
Yeah. Because that's like a extracurricular, if you will. That's mm-hmm. like it's an elective. Mm-hmm. So just general education, as far as media literacy goes, what really stands out to me is middle school health class when we learned about cyberbullying, and you know, not messaging anyone you don't know. Be careful what you put on the internet. That feels like the only time we really learned about media mm-hmm. and how you interact with it. I mean, in history, we were always told, you know, don't go on Wikipedia, make mm-hmm. sure you fact check your sources, cite your sources. But I'd say there's really, like Diego said, it's media literacy is a skill set. So mm-hmm. if you don't have like a knack for that skill set, it's not gonna click.
Yeah, for sure. Charlie, yeah. You know, you go or you went
right.
To the same school as Ayla, but could you say that that's like a similar experience that you had as far as media literacy education at Clayton?
I think most of the media literacy that I encounter mm-hmm. is stuff and topics that you end up discussing in a class that's discussion-based, like an English course or a history course. And, you know, when you're reading 1984 by George Orwell in sophomore, you know, honors English, you end up talking about how is this relevant and, like, applicable to our society and what's happening right now in the real world. And that's where you end up having conversations surrounding what's going on, how can I learn more about it, how can I formulate my own opinion on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what about Parkway Central, Diego?
I think there's a couple things to hit on. I'd say there it's not clearly established, like, in the curriculum. We don't have a specific class or lessons based on media literacy. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's been mentioned before, you know, since elementary school till now, we've been taught to look for like reliable resources. We've gotten a feel for what an authentic source of what like actual research, what it sounds like, what it feels like. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's something that has helped a lot of people. It's not that the current way that things are done makes people media like illiterate. It's mm-hmm. not doesn't right. have a negative effect. It could be better. But where we are right now, I feel like for some people or like specific teachers, if when they touch on it and when they really focus on it, it can help a lot. Mm-hmm. I think Parkway Central's done a good job of explaining, you know, what a real source is. Even if it's really, you know, looking at like research or doing like research papers, it's not applicable to scrolling on Instagram. When you really get a feel for what, you know, authenticity and what real sources look like, it's kind of easy to apply that to every day.
Do you guys think that a media literacy class curriculum is necessary? Is it important for there to be just a standardized baseline way of teaching these skills? Diego?
Yeah, I would say a couple things. I think first off, it'd be great if it was implemented, you know, like directly into the curriculum of everywhere, you know, regardless. It's really hard to like kind of force kids to learn something when it's mm-hmm. it's specifically made for you to learn, to just sit in a room and learn how to be media literate. I don't think that's the best way to do something. I think the best way to do something would be to be more active in it. And mm-hmm. I think you would do that just kind of sprinkling it in, especially, you know, when you're in elementary school, especially as younger kids use way more electronics and more media. They consume more than we did. Mm-hmm. I think if you put that in the beginning, it's not so much more necessary to, you know, shove it in at the end mm-hmm. of high school.
Yeah, that makes sense. Charlie, what do you think?
I think it would be more important to be able to, you know, kind of exactly what Diego said, is implement that in every facet and aspect of what you're learning about in school. Mm-hmm. Granted, that is harder, but if a media literacy course were to be structured where it would be like, you know, let's have discussions about this thing that happened in the news the other day. Mm-hmm. How are we going to use what we learned in this class to have a productive conversation where we don't get hostile or polarized, and let's just have civil discourse about this, because that's something we've really lost as a society. Like, not to get, you know, political, but I think we've really lost this nuance to mm-hmm. be able to recognize that we can disagree with each other and still respect each other, mm-hmm. and we can not think the same things or come from the same background, but we can still recognize that what we have to say is important and valued. And if a media literacy class was structured in that way, I do think it would be really beneficial for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Back to Diego's very optimistic, what was it, B?
B plus.
Wow. Can't forget the plus. What do you think your generation can teach others, younger than you, older than you, about consumption and interaction with the news and the media? Because I think especially older generations think that, what do they know, right? Yes. And there's always a little bit of that when it comes to with each generation, you know? Mm-hmm. But like I've heard today, y'all know what's up. So what do you think Gen Z can teach folks older and younger? Ayla.
I believe our generation can teach others that media is okay. It's okay. Like, we are looked down upon a lot because we're always on our phones. Mm-hmm. But being active on social media, staying up to date with news articles that might come to your phone, like, it's okay. It's okay for things to switch. We don't have to stay in old traditions, especially as technology advances and as we keep moving forward as a society. Mm. It would kind of be silly of us to stay behind when everything keeps advancing and continuing to grow. We have to move with it, and that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, that's a great point. Charlie, what do you think your generation can teach those younger and older?
I think we can all teach each other. We just need to respect each other a little more. We need to, you know, and we need to be able to recognize that we all have something valuable to bring to the table and to say, and we all come from different backgrounds, and we need to be able to, you know, especially in this era, you know, not to get pessimistic or anything, but no one is kind to each other, no one respects each other, no one wants to listen to each other anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's a part of, you know, having these echo chambers in social media. Like, things can get really, really dangerous really, really quick, mm-hmm. if we don't just talk. And I think we can always be wary about social media, you know. Like Ayla said at the very beginning of this interview, you need to be taking things with a grain of salt and doing your own research. Mm-hmm. But also being able to recognize that social media is okay, and as long as you take it with a grain of salt, and as long as you are responsible with it, great things can happen from it. I know, you know, people talk about, like, Twitter activism, you know, like, things like that. You know, if that could actually have drastic benefits to society, like, people shouldn't be looking at social media with this negative light, and people shouldn't be looking at Gen Zers with this negative light. You know, I think we just need to have a little bit more optimism and be like Diego, I think, for our future. We need to all channel Diego a little bit more.
Yeah, manifest that, that B plus into A plus. Diego, in our final minute, what can your generation teach those younger and older?
I think that the youth offers what, in the same way that somebody coming into this country offers a new perspective, I think the youth offers a new perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think it should, like you said, should be just as valued as someone else. It's just different. You know, yeah, mm-hmm. we value different things than the people older than us, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. We just need to find a way to talk about things and come to an agreement that helps all of us, instead of, you know, being divided and saying either I get everything my way or the youth gets everything their way. I think we need to be able to talk about what's most important to us and be able to reach a consensus. And we can only do that, like you said, through conversations. And I feel like it's really hard to have those without them seeming like personal attacks or shutting down ideas simply because of like a party or of an ideology. And it's not really about ideas or conversations anymore. It's just about sides or teams, and not a lot can be done when it's like that.
That was producer Roche Hemmings speaking with Charlie Myers, Diego Perez Palomino, and Ayla Hopper. Next week, Charlie and Diego will be seniors at Clayton High School and Parkway Central High, respectively. Ayla begins freshman year at St. Louis University this month. We need to take a quick break. When we return, we'll talk with an expert about ways media literacy is being learned, practiced, and taught. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
Welcome back. Before the break, we heard producer Roche Hemmings talking with three young St. Louisans about their personal experiences with learning and practicing media literacy. We now welcome a guest who spends a great deal of time thinking about practical ways to understand and approach that topic. That's Danelle Probst, Deputy Director at the National Association of Media Literacy. Danelle, thank you for joining us on St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you for having me.
So, let's talk about what media literacy is and perhaps how we use it in the day-to-day, maybe in ways that we might not even be consciously deploying.
Yeah, so we define media literacy as the ability to access, analyze, evaluate, create, and act using all forms of media. So I think, you know, we typically think of news consumption, fact-checking, you know, that's kind of the baseline for media literacy, but it's really much more comprehensive. So I think one of the ways that we often forget we're practicing media literacy is when we create content, which everyone has access to be a content creator in this day and age. So that's really a skill where we're applying different media literacy skills and thought processes in the way we create and put out content. Mm-hmm.
So would that be like on social media when we share something?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Is there maybe an example of something that you have seen to sort of explain, particularly to those maybe who are not as involved personally with social media to illustrate what you're talking about?
Sure. I think often during breaking news, we see a lot of content creators come out of the woodwork. Mm-hmm. We see a lot of reposting. Even just the simple act of reposting something that someone else has reposted is a form of content creation. Mm-hmm. And during that process, we should be using media literacy skills and thinking about who created this original post I'm sharing? How do I know that they know that what they're sharing is accurate? Mm-hmm. How can I think about this in a more complex way, or maybe take a minute and not post it until I can really, verify what this is? I think that's where we see a lot of content come out that is, you know, a little rushed.
Mm-hmm. So we heard from Ayla, Charlie, and Diego, mm-hmm. and they assigned a rather broad range of grades and emojis right to their peers' media literacy. Danelle, do you think the general population would get the same marks? I mean, are we maybe better than we think we are?
I think that if we're realistic, mm-hmm. we all could use some work,
okay.
all of us, even those working at the National Association for Media Literacy Education. Mm-hmm. It is a process. It is a skill, as the students said over and over. It's something that needs to be practiced. And so we're thinking about, you know, how can we extend that practice not only in the classrooms, as the students discussed, but also at home, you know, how are they seeing that those skills modeled and practiced by their parents and their grandparents and other community members? And so I think we really all have to be conscious about what we're putting out and who is consuming that and seeing the way that we're using information.
Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, you've been with the National Association of Media Literacy for about a decade or
almost,
so?
Yeah,
almost,
yeah.
Almost a decade. Was there a specific moment for you personally when you realized that we as a society, we need to get ourselves together to become more attentive to media literacy? I mean, maybe something that sets you in the direction of working with an organization that is dedicated to literacy insofar as media is concerned?
Yeah, I think my experience as a special education advocate, I saw the way that the media didn't always portray people with disabilities in a way that was holistic or sometimes even accurate. And so I think understanding that media and content that's created when the people who are involved as part of that story are not being, you know, spoken to or not involved in creating that content can actually create media that changes the way we see people around us that live in our communities.
Mm-hmm. And I left out the word education from yes. the name of the that's very key why we're talking here. So among educators who turn to National Association of Media Literacy Education, what are some of the common concerns or areas of, you know, support request that you field?
I think one of the biggest requests and something that we're not always able to fulfill is the lack of standards in media literacy education. That is a big issue. I know, you know, the students had a little bit of a conversation about that as well. I think we're often have teachers who are looking for resources. Mm-hmm. They're looking for professional development because there's not a lot of professional development around media literacy. So in order for them to teach it, they need to understand media literacy themselves. So there's a lot of work to do.
And given all of the things that teachers are saddled with, I'd imagine that it can be difficult to keep up with everything that's changing out there.
It is. And we have a lot of teachers who, as you can imagine, it's, you know, one more thing they feel like they have to teach. And then one of the students mentioned this, that they really felt like media literacy should be incorporated across the curriculum, you know, mm-hmm. from the time they're in elementary school forward. And we wholeheartedly agree with that. You know, it's something that requires repetition and practice across different subject areas. And
I think
a lot of teachers are actually teaching it, but they don't know they're teaching it at this mm-hmm. point.
So what is then the benefit of a multidisciplinary approach?
Because the information we consume is multidisciplinary as adults. Once, you know, we move out of the education space, we're encountering graphs and studies and images and, you know, written content. So it is, you know, some of it's historical, some of it is, you know, involves math skills, and, you know, it's very broad in its mm-hmm. reach.
Yeah. Is there perhaps an advantage in school because that is to teaching media literacy in school because of one of the things that was mentioned by the students is that there is not enough engagement among and between people. And once you leave the formal education system, you're kind of left on your own to mm-hmm. make choices about where you're meeting. So again, is there an advantage to teaching media literacy in the school setting? And does that add a layer of necessary accountability?
I think there, as the students mentioned several times, there is this layer of really understanding that you need to kind of look outside of your own opinions and thoughts and really look into information and think about recognize how your own thoughts, feelings, beliefs really impact how you interpret a piece of media or how you interact with someone who might have a different opinion. And so building that skill set of being open to thinking about your own biases and your own beliefs and how those impact information is an essential skill mm-hmm. for today.
Donnell, I'd like to talk about the connections between past and present, but also between students and all the other people they're around. So what is a connection between how media literacy has been taught in the past and how it is being approached these days?
Well, I think the biggest difference is technology. Mm-hmm. You know, this is why media literacy education is so important, because it teaches that skill set, that process. It is not an end point where you're having students arrive at a conclusion or an opinion. You're teaching them how to navigate something. So whether that is, you know, social media, whether it is AI, a video game, you know, music lyric or technology that we don't even yet know will exist, mm-hmm. that process will be the same.
Yeah. In practical terms, what is the connection between the student who is learning how to interact with media critically and the environments that they are part of outside the classroom setting?
I think in practical terms, I think students are probably more aware than we give them credit for about what is happening in online environments, in, you know, dinner table discussions about current events and how we're perceiving the world based on the information we consume. And I think having a society who is, you know, more holistically media literate will provide better modeling, better experiences for younger people and how to kind of, you know, navigate this complex environment we live in now.
Mm-hmm. To what extent, Donnell, are school boards in the St. Louis region in support of media literacy education? I mean, what are the conversations those who are part of school boards are having around this?
I think, unfortunately, school boards are inundated with other issues that are eclipsing things like media literacy. I think there are a lot of champions out there, many who are on school boards, but there is a lack of understanding about what media literacy is, what its intention is, how it works. And so that lack of understanding, I think, leads to some skepticism or maybe even fear about what media literacy education is.
Mm-hmm. To Diego's point, he had said something about more intentional media consumption. So doom scrolling, which involves, you know, scrolling through news online and other content that feeds negative feelings like, you know, anxiety, anger, sadness, that is a very real phenomenon. Are there some concrete steps that you would recommend, Donnell, for healthier media consumption?
Yeah, I think number one is recognizing how media is making you feel. I think that's incredibly important. If you're having a strong reaction, whether it's emotional, you know, if you're angry, if you're sad, things like that, that's a moment to be able to say, I need to step away and take a break. I think, you know, a lot of technology now has the ability to limit how much time we spend on certain applications and different types of technology. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some, you know, kind of guardrails we can set for ourselves in order to create healthier media habits.
Mm-hmm. And in the last 30 seconds or so, what's one lesson that you, Donnell, have learned about media literacy from digital natives like the students we heard from earlier?
They know a lot more than what we give them credit for, and they're all right.
Yeah. Donnell Probst is Deputy Director of the National Association for Media Literacy Education. Donnell, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much.
This episode was produced by Roche Hemmings.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.